you're at the top of the food chain like Reese Witherspoon at the age of 36 and there's just shit out there, then what is out there for, or what was out there for other people before the likes of Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington and Ava DuVernay started doing and making their own stuff?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Lainey. I am the founder of LaineyGossip.com. I am still a talk show host and entertainment reporter, although I haven't been able to do that lately.
I'm Duana Taha. I am a television screenwriter and producer, and I will admit to a little bit of working from home smugness because we freelancers have been out here. We're ready to share our knowledge with you all.
On this episode, we celebrate the growth of Reese Witherspoon.
She discovered an industry that nobody knew was there and made it her own. We are digging all the way into it. Plus, we are talking about all the other things we're digging into since we have nothing but time.
This is Show Your Work. Hey, so when it comes to Show Your Work, I think it's safe to say that nobody is showing their work better than the thousands, hundreds of healthcare professionals around the world who are trying to combat coronavirus, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing that they're living by a whole other set of rules, right?
Yeah.
It's shelter in place. It's stay isolated. And they're like, no, I'm actually walking directly into the fire.
And providing information. I think that here in Canada in particular, just want to shout out two people who have become like mini viral superstars. Of course.
I know where this is going.
Yeah. the first person is Dr. Theresa Tam. And Dr. Theresa Tam is Canada's chief medical officer. She's been the one daily, multiple times, sometimes providing updates to the media about flattening the curve. Lately, she's been saying planking the curve. And people online on social media in Canada are obsessed with her. And you and I are obsessed with her.
If you haven't had the pleasure, Dr. Theresa Tam has a level of calm, yes, and a level of just smarts, but she's also not super studied. A lot of people, entirely justifiably right now, are reading from notes or referring to things, and she's just kind of rhyming it off, which gives it a casualness that is really super comforting.
Yeah.
She's just sitting there going, yeah, don't go outside. You need to cover your face. You know, all these kinds of things. But it's so casual that you're like, of course, she thinks it's easy. So why shouldn't I? It's obviously easy.
Yeah. And it's also, there's a casual confidence about her where she's like, I know my shit, so when I'm delivering it in this manner, nobody is fucking stepping up to this podium, asking stupid questions, challenging me. Do not come here. Do not step to me with your shady science or your dumbass questionnaire. I am telling you what you need to know. I do not expect any follow-up questions because what I am telling you is so comprehensive that, you know, go on out and do the thing I'm telling you to do. The end. Goodbye. I have other things to get to now.
I mean, she'll answer your questions. It's not that she won't.
Of course not.
It's just that
yeah,
you shouldn't need to ask any because she's been so thorough.
That's right. And then the other person I wanted to shout out, this came to me from an email that I received from Kat, a reader called Kat. Kat wants to shout out the province of Alberta's chief medical officer. Her name is Dr. Dina Hinshaw. Dr. Dina Hinshaw, obviously, for people in Alberta, is front and center, providing information, making sure people out there understand the guidelines. And what's amazing is that Dr. Hinshaw, during one of her press conferences, wore this dress And the dress has the periodic table on it. Like it's
in no.
The, yeah. It's in the periodic table. Like the print is the periodic table. And she wears it when she's delivering information. And so people saw, they were like, oh my God, we love this dress. It has a periodic table on it. And it turns out that the dress is made from a company in British Columbia called Smoking Lily. And Smoking Lily's owner, Trish Tacoma, says her company's inbox has been overflowing with requests for the dress. You know, Trish, the owner, was worried that, you know, she would have to, like, lay off people, and she was worried about her business, her company. But maybe right now she she said that she was in tears when she told her 18 employees that the shops and studio had to close down on Monday, but the messages from customers have cheered her up. So well done, Dr. Dina Hinshaw, for obviously the main priority, which is providing information to people, but also for hopefully helping a small business owner's business through her fashion during this time.
Yeah, way to stimulate the economy.
And it does need stimulating.
Here has been my revelation from day 5, 7, 9, whatever we're on now. Obviously, I've done conference calls before, but we're all doing way, way more than we used to, right? So my challenges are, if I'm on a video call, first of all, it's extremely hard to be normal on a video call, right? I'm always fussing with my hair or like trying to see if my interested face is actually translating, as opposed to like, I'm trying to look interesting while also scratching my heel. But if it's on a call that's an actual call, I'm doing a ton of pacing. And then if I pace, I wind up in front of a mirror. I'm making faces in front of a mirror. I tied up my shirt like Jessica Simpson and Daisy Duke at one point today. Are you doing anything weird to amuse yourself?
Well, I don't know that I'm doing anything weird, but it is like I have, like you, been on so many video conferences lately. So I guess that's why like everybody has Zoom coming out of their mouth. And
yeah,
for us in our friend group, like I find that for us or me, there's a division, like Zoom for work and house party for friend shit. So house party is the other app that allows you to like hop on the phone, the video phone, to literally house party with your friends. You and I did a couple of parties yesterday. I did a party with you. Then I did two other parties with other people. I have two parties to go to tonight.
Except that here's the hilarious thing about house party, which is not sponsoring, but we would happily spokesperson for. I can still see who you're talking to when you're not talking to me.
Yeah.
Which I kind of think, don't fix this, please. I love that aspect that you can look in and see, oh, Lainey's talking to so-and-so and so-and-so. Okay. And you can actually crash the party.
Yes.
If it's not a locked room, which is even more hilarious.
Anyway. So yeah, Zoom for the business stuff. And I find that, for video conferencing, I'm not doing anything weird, but you and I share this thing where we like to multitask. So I can be on a call that doesn't have video and I can
yes.
look at my email and keep writing for the blog and text. And it doesn't affect me, but I know that if some other people were watching it, they would think it's rude. It's just you and I have brains like that. So for instance, when we're podcasting, often you might be sitting across from me usually when we podcast under regular circumstances and you'll be playing whatever game on your phone, but we're still having a conversation. Doesn't bother me. Like that is – but it does bother other people. So now I have to be extra conscious about that.
Right. Yeah. Though all those things, some people doodle. It's ironically the things that you do that help you focus more. Sometimes because I can't play a game on my phone or whatever, something that helps me listen better, hence the pacing, I can't write or read while I'm on a call, though. I'd start putting in the words from the call instead of the words from the writing. Different strokes, but it's fascinating how everybody's adapting.
Anyway, if you have Zoom or House Party stories to share with us, do so. And if you haven't hooked up to House Party yet with your friends, go for it. It's super fun. We just discovered it a couple of days ago, and a bunch of us cooked dinner together yesterday while having a cocktail. And we have scheduled parties, you know, every night now. I think tonight our party is at 9, right, Duanna?
So far. So far, 9 o'clock.
I have one at 5:30 and I have one at 9. So this is how we're keeping connected, and we're finding fresh ways to keep doing our work and keep up with our relationships through technology. Once again, this episode of Show Your Work is coming to you via FaceTime because we are social distancing and we haven't seen each other, but we're seeing each other. So if there are audio issues, please do let us know. And without further ado, we're going to get into the meat of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to have the meat of it because a lot of entertainment has slowed down as well, which is why this profile that you sent me was so delightful for two reasons. It is A, because it's delicious and juicy and we get to take it apart the way we love to do, but B, because it focuses so much around books, and what's happened in this sudden new world is that people are almost rediscovering reading in a way. So thank you, Vanity Fair profile of Reese Witherspoon, for being a lot more topical than you might have thought when it was first commissioned.
Yeah, and of course it was commissioned for the release, the premiere of Little Fires Everywhere, which is the latest TV series that she's adapted from a best-selling book. That would be Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng. And she co-produces the series on Hulu with Kerry Washington. It is not yet available in Canada, so we haven't watched it. Dying to.
Someone, this is not the time to throw tantrums.
This is my opportunity to be like, hey, American listeners and Hulu, someone send me a screener, please. Thank you.
But it did. It dropped on Wednesday. And so the response has been, you know, really excited. Everybody's really eager to see this go down. But really, more than the reaction to the series itself, it's part of a continued reaction to Reese Witherspoon, right?
Right.
Like, so, Little Fires Everywhere, as you said, is just the latest in the projects that she is A, adapting, or B, getting involved with as a producer. And being a star is adjacent, if you will.
That's right. And I should say, Little Fires Everywhere, if you haven't read the book, read the book. It's really, really good. Add to your social distancing long pile of to reads. And she is now at the point where, I mean, it has been this way for a couple of years now. She's at the top of the list when there is a hot book, when there is a new book, when there is an author about to release the book. She's getting the books probably 6 months to a year ahead of publication. Because everybody wants to put their stories in front of her now, particularly works by women.
Yeah, and that, I think, is what is so interesting about this whole phenomenon. So the profile kind of goes into a story that we knew a little bit, but that maybe hasn't been said in so many words. There was a point after Walk the Line where Reese Witherspoon's career stalled.
Yeah.
Like, that seems impossible, but that there were not roles. And so she was told by her then agent, now husband, and her team, Jim Toth is her husband, who was at CAA, you're going to have to make the things if you want to be in them. And that alone is a big thing to say to anybody. I think a lot of people hear that and kind of wince or shrug or go, I don't know how to do that, and hope that something else will come along. So first of all, the fact that she actually took him up on it and decided to pursue that is part of where this story begins, what's unusual. What I love about what you said about stories for women is that she went a step further and said, what can I create that nobody else can? What's an environment or an avenue where I can add value that nobody else is currently digging into? And that's what led her to the huge world of, call it literature written by women, let's say.
And it's organic too, because as she said, I am a reader. Like she reads constantly. And I think what comes across in this piece more than in other profiles about her that have come out in the last couple of years is the legitimacy behind that. And it's not like she had to validate the fact that she reads, but it really comes through in this article that reading wasn't something she just took up like 5 years ago when all of this started rolling. It was always a part of her life. She's always been quite knowledgeable about books, way back from, they bring up her high school teachers and this English teacher and people who taught her in the past. So she took something that was already there in her life and was like, hey, I'm already into this anyway. Let me see if I can throw my capital behind it and see what happens. I also really like the fact, or not really like, I want to highlight the fact that at 36, after winning an Oscar for Walk the Line, if things were drying up for Reese Witherspoon, imagine what it was like for other people, or what it may continue to be like for other people. I mean, Reese Witherspoon, and as you said, Duana, you said it might seem pretty ridiculous, and it kind of does seem ridiculous, right? Like, and it's not like Reese Witherspoon wasn't getting opportunities. It was that she was getting opportunities that were not interesting to her. And if you're at the top of the food chain like Reese Witherspoon at the age of 36, and there's just shit out there, then Christ, what is out there for, or what was out there for other people before the likes of Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington and Ava DuVernay started doing and making their own stuff, right?
Right. And, we've talked about this before in a different context. The reason there was nothing out there is because the middle fell out of the movie industry. Because the movies that started being made were incredibly expensive and high budget franchises and superhero pictures and things of that nature. So there was less money for the mid-budget. Obviously, Reese Witherspoon was known for rom-coms, but also for sort of contemporary dramas, that kind of thing. And those stories stopped being made in 90-minute form. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that Reese was able to do this pivot that she did, with the exception of Wild, all of these projects that we are lauding her for and complimenting her for are on television, because that's where contemporary drama went to live. And we've talked before about how the TV landscape has changed and all that kind of thing. But she had to be willing to make that pivot.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I think, weren't necessarily. And we talked about how becoming the person who does the work for themselves, who creates the work for themselves, is intimidating. And, as you said, this was something she was already doing. And not to kind of bring the lesson of the piece in right at the beginning, but that I think is really important, that it was something that she could already do because of who she was, not about, can I become what the audience wants? She wasn't like, can I, remake my body into a superhero form? It was like, I'm not going to do that. How do I continue to be me? In what format? In what place can I continue to be a kind of an eager, bookish person who always has her hand raised?
Well, there are two things I couldn't wait to talk about with you. The first is the part where she was like, I love reading and I know what hits, I know what tracks, I know what a good book is, but I'm not a writer. I I was like, okay, that's a highlight. We're going to talk about this. Because, you know, for her, and she's very explicit about this, she's like, I've got great ideas and I have a good start, but I am not a closer. That is a very specific awareness about one's skill set, you know, to be like, I read, I'm into a good story, I can recognize a good story, but I'm not going to pretend that I can do what these people do. Instead, I will be the shepherd. I will be the champion of people's work and I can move it through. But I might know books and I have got this book club and I've been adapting all these books for television series and sometimes movies, but I'm not going to be a writer. Thank you, Reese Witherspoon.
Well, let's just give that even a little more air, because a lot of people think they are writers or could be writers. This is a complaint of writers, and it's boring to listen to anybody complain about their jobs, but especially people who get to do what a lot of people think they want to do. But when you say to anybody that you are a writer, they say, oh yeah, I've always been thinking about writing a book or writing a show. Oh, have you? Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. A lot of people think it's as easy as just doing it. If they just had the time, if they just had the whatever, they could knock out a book, a series, a movie. That goes triple for somebody who is in the business. A Reese Witherspoon or somebody like her would be forgiven for thinking, oh yeah, I know how to write. And a lot of people do many things in the industry. A lot of people are multi-hyphenates. So for her to separate herself out from her contemporaries who do write and direct for themselves or whatever is pretty, like, it's pretty humble.
Yeah, it is pretty humble. And, you know, we don't need to name names, but I will. Like, if only Sean Penn, you know what I mean?
At least, yeah. But yeah. Many others as well, you know? I think there are probably a lot of her contemporaries who have discovered they're not writers or not directors, but who wouldn't come out and say it so baldly.
Yeah. So that is, to me, that is a part of the work, is editing out, hey, this is work that I'm not good at, but I will uplift the people who can do it. And here's work I am good at that can complement the good work of other people. It was really nicely framed there by her. And it was really, to me, I mean, I haven't read everything that Reese Witherspoon has done interviews for, but it was a nice punctuation, and really the first time I had read something like that, and I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and it's all the more exciting because it's rare. It just lends more authenticity. Again, not that she has to kind of show off her bona fides. We're not like gamergating here, but it makes it clear that she does love and respect books and stories for what they are.
And then the other part that I liked, it was just like, you know, the writer of the piece included it for a reason. And it's a scene, and you can picture them going through a bookstore. And the writer of the piece, it's Anne Patchett. She says, hey, here's a book I really love, and it would be so good to adapt. And Reese, with the boss's eye, a leadership voice, says, yeah, I've read it. It's too interior. It's one quick scene in the piece, but it speaks to how she must be working. It speaks to how much she must be working as she's running this empire, right? As she's making decisions about what books, what works to acquire, what qualifies as something that she might consider, how she's thinking about what to lend her name to, and obviously with an eye to, yes, supporting a certain kind of work and the people who do that work, specifically women, but also what would be successful.
Because what will translate on screen? There are beautiful books that I love, that you love and adore, with a lot of amazing stuff to them that don't actually translate. And I would actually argue that this is the problem with the Harry Potter franchise. Not where we thought we were going to go here, but what makes Harry Potter
different than just a kid's story about magic, which is what people always kind of ask about and wonder, is that in addition to all the cool stuff going on, the characters, particularly the main character, Harry, are having kind of these internal churns about where do I fit in this world and what is this for and do I count, do I matter? A lot of that stuff, despite everybody's best efforts, doesn't make it on screen, which is why the movies wind up seeming like really cool looking montages. They're not really stories. And it actually is a real sophistication with screenwriting for her to say, no, you have to be able to see not just cool things happening, but you have to be able to see the changes happening to the person in the moment, which is the entire point of Wild, right?
Yeah. So, listen, it's not a super long piece. It's a standard length Vanity Fair profile, but there were so many good takeaways about how Reese Witherspoon is working. I mean, God, if Reese Witherspoon could give us like a reality show about running Hello Sunshine, I think that you and I would pornographically be obsessed with it. And because, again, she's judiciously choosing what work she's good at and what she can really put her energy behind. And it's really exciting because it doesn't even seem like she's peaked yet.
No, it doesn't. And when I read pieces like this that seem pretty clear-eyed, obviously it's a flattering piece, but it also seems like it's looking at her. What is really resonant to me over and over again is that this is a story about Reese already being who she is. That's what the superpower is here. They have this really interesting passage where they call her high school English teacher. It says high school English teacher turned author and friend. And I could read a whole book or watch a movie about the evolution of that process of, you know, oh, my former student is now a Hollywood actress. And how do we reconnect? And does she encourage me to write? But whatever. But the quote is this. When you're a high school teacher and you teach bright kids, there's always going to be one kid who's waiting for you to prove that you're smart enough to be her teacher, Rankle said. Reese was always that one. She was a little bit skeptical, a little unsure, but it wasn't long before she became the student whose eyes never leave your face because you're saying what they need to hear. Is that not kind of Reese Witherspoon as a celebrity, as a personality? She's a little skeptical. She's a little too smart for everything, right?
Yep.
That is, like, I think we all would have acknowledged as people working in entertainment that an interview with Reese Witherspoon or Julia Roberts or a lot of the people we admired was not necessarily going to be super easy. You were going to have to earn it, right?
Yep.
But that same thing of I'm a little skeptical, I'm not sure about this, is what makes her a phenomenal producer, what makes her be able to know the difference between, yes, this is a great story for the screen, and this is too interior. It's so important to lean into the things that have always been you, even if they don't seem necessarily to be complementary. That's her superpower. Calling her production company Type A, leaning into that thing of, oh God, Reese is never satisfied. That's what has made her the success that she is instead of being the stumbling block.
What do you think about the part where she tried to very patiently push back against the journalists or the writers' assertion about women and how they dress?
You guys listening can't see right now that I am giving a significant and smug look to the FaceTime camera as we talk about this. To just underline what that part is in case you haven't yet read it. The author says, I don't really understand why a lot of people talk about harassment or gendered inequality on film sets or in entertainment, but they're doing it, quote, where is it here? She says, but they're photographed draped backwards over a sofa with no top on under their jacket. Does that send a mixed signal? She asks Reese Witherspoon.
So you had the same reaction, right?
I had the same, well, the same reaction as the author or as you to what
As me next. To what the author of this piece was doing.
I did, but I was more interested in how the response plays out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the response is for sure. I mean, she handled it amazingly. And I mean, Reese, it was just, that was when I was like, oh no, really? And I'm happy that the writer included that as I think it's, as transparency, but it frustrated me that there are still women asking questions like that.
Well, and I think it is, but the reason I said I liked the way Reese handled it is because she couches it all in age in a really interesting way. I don't know the age of the writer, but it does seem as though, A, she's coming from kind of an older perspective where you either did think of yourself as a sexual being or as an intellectual, and never the two should cross over. Initially, when Reese Witherspoon is responding, she says, oh, I'll tell you what my daughter would say. And then she says, my daughter would say, women are allowed to own their sexuality, of course, and the two things are not separate, and you can be all of those things, and why shouldn't you be able to feel yourself in the way, why shouldn't you be able to feel good about yourself and attractive, even as you're saying something about how you don't want to be treated, that you're the person who owns your sexuality and that your consent about it is what matters. And then Reese goes on to say, I understand that you're struggling because I always thought of myself as a funny woman. I wanted to be funny. I wanted to be Carol Burnett or Goldie Hawn or Diane Keaton or whomever. Goldie Hawn is kind of an exception there, but all of whom are primarily not sex symbols was what she was saying, right?
Right.
But the reason I like that it was laid out that way is because to me, I bet you if we dug even a little bit, I would bet you a lot of money that there is some interview somewhere of Reese Witherspoon at 25 or 27 being like, come on, girls, cover up. Or, you don't have to have your whatever all over the place.
There is, yes.
I think that framing it as my daughter would say this and so I have learned this indicates, hey, I grew and I had to talk to somebody younger in order to grow. And, like, not to make it too big a point of it, but, like, suddenly there's this generational thing with, between OK Boomer and Millennials or Gen Z. And I really like that what she is saying here is that she learned from somebody younger and that what you believe at 25, what you run your mouth about at 25 is not necessarily how you're going to feel about something 20 years later.
I agree. I really enjoyed the handling of it. I didn't like the question, but I really enjoyed the handling of it. And I think that too, she was very active, or she is very active with Time's Up. She is one of the faces, or she was one of the faces. You remember at the Golden Globes?
Yeah, of course.
How long ago is that now?
eons.
And, she was attending the committee meetings. She was one of the most prominent people who was actively supporting this new organization. And we had learned that there were all kinds of meetings with women in Hollywood where they were listening to each other, sharing with each other their experiences, and then also, as you're saying, learning from each other. And there's real evidence, I think, especially the things that Kerry Washington says about her in this piece too. Yes, they're colleagues now. They co-produced together. They co-produced Little Fires Everywhere together. But there's a real sense here that Reese Witherspoon has been listening and learning. And I think back to her probably, the time she spent on a set with Ava DuVernay, for example. They did A Wrinkle in Time. And
with Oprah and Mindy Kaling and so forth.
And so we all know what Ava's work is all about, what Ava's stance has been about, what Ava is trying to champion and change in Hollywood. And so for Reese to have surrounded herself with women who may not have the experiences and the privileges that she has had, listen to their stories, and then try to take that learning and funnel it into her own work, I think there's real evidence that there has been that kind of growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And that you can't call yourself somebody who believes in stories told by women, not even for women, because I believe that women, like everybody, tell stories for everybody, but that you can't endorse stories told by women and then believe in the kind of black and white thinking that benefits the men and other harassers that we're trying to eradicate, right? You have to go, okay, it's different for everybody. Okay, there are shades of gray, in order to be able to back up what you're saying to and for those women. So yeah, I like it a lot, but I like it especially because it, to me, speaks to an evolution.
And that is, yeah, where we are now with Reese Witherspoon, this profile at this time in her career, after the successes of Wild, of Big Little Lies, of The Morning Show, now soon to be Little Fires Everywhere. I'm really excited to watch Little Fires Everywhere whenever we get in Canada, but also to come back to this article maybe in 2 years and see what added learning, hopefully, probably, we can put on top of this piece.
Well, what I'm most excited about is that even as, yes, we agitate for Little Fires Everywhere, a lot of the pieces that Reese has appeared in are women who are, you know, our mothers, our career people, are not unlike Reese Witherspoon herself. The big Hello Sunshine adaptation that we are waiting with bated breath on is Daisy Jones and the Six, which is, as we speak, is in production, or was before the great shutdown of 2020. And it is not a Reese Witherspoon story. I don't think she appears in it in any way, but it is visual, it is female, it is so many things that we endorse. So I think if it lands the way we hope it will speak to Reese Witherspoon as the mother of an entire empire, not just one that is centered around herself, which is super exciting.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
By the way, who acquired Kylie Reed such a fun age?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm just going to look it up right now.
All right.
Because I do – she did also pump it up on her book club. But I don't know yet, and that is definitely adaptable. I don't know if it's been acquired yet. We will look. We will look into it more. Update you next time.
I would wager money that it is tied up somewhere, whether or not it's been
announced,
published yet. Yeah. But you're right. That's a great one, albeit one that also might look more like a film at first.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah,
I got it. You're gonna love this.
Go,
Lena Waithe.
Such a Fun Age has been acquired by Lena Waithe.
Yes.
That's a really smart purchase.
For adaptation. Yeah. So, anyway, books, man. Read these books.
It goes without saying, but please tell us what you're reading that you would actually like to see adapted, authors that you think are on the cusp of being discovered, or have recently dropped something that is such a seminal work that it's that you think is going to be, you know, made into a something. Obviously, not every book that gets acquired actually makes it to the screen, but it's a really exciting avenue because the stories are also not the same stories we've seen all this time.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Before we get into more recommendations, though, for your social distancing time, because this could be weeks or months, y'all. Let's read an email from somebody who responded to our last episode. And again, we're trying to get more episodes out during this this time of self-isolation. We're trying to get this episode up for March 23rd. On March 23rd, we will hopefully be recording yet another episode to get a new one up for March 25. Please don't lock us into those days, but this is what we're trying to do to make sure that you have podcasts to listen to. So definitely send us your recommendations and definitely send us your emails like this from Katie. So here's what Katie wrote to us. Katie said, so far, my favorite part of the podcast, that's last episode, is when Duanna told Lainey to back up and take it from, which is a window into the work you guys do every day. And it was awesome. Initially, I reacted to it because it's like listening to people who are bilingual having a conversation where they drop in words from another language or even switch languages mid-sentence and the other person doesn't even blink. Then I realized it was also the effortless switch from friend-coworker mode to one person giving professional direction and the other person taking directions. I think one of the reasons I enjoy the podcast so much is because, believe it or not, there are a lot of similarities between the entertainment industry and the resource industry, which I'm in. I'm a geologist. Hello, Katie. Now we're tits are hard right now.
We're
Duanna and I are profession nerds. And yeah, geologists, bring it on. So Katie continues, now the job descriptions are a little different and the human dynamics and interactions are the same. You're a small group of people for extended periods. You're with a small group of people for extended periods of time. You see only those people in remote locations. You literally live with these people. You work in very close quarters and hopefully you all get along, but sometimes you also become really close friends, some closer than others, but that's another story. So it always amuses me when I hear job advice about keeping your work life separate and not to hire your friends. That often doesn't apply. In fact, you want to work with your friends or at least people you know because it makes life easier, assuming you're all good at your jobs. That said, at times, someone is going to have to be the boss of their friends and that dynamic is challenging, but my favorite people to work with are those that recognize when that switch happens and respond accordingly. I also love knowing that if coworker A says, it means they have a question or suggestion and we will discuss. However, if coworker B says, it means that if we don't act now, shit will hit the fan. Finally, apparently I've got time on my hands here. Hello, being socially, physically distant. Any question that starts with, do you want to hear the inside baseball of? My response will be yes. Okay, Katie, thank you so much. Brought up so many good things there.
Well, it made me realize that as we're talking about, Kerry Washington saying wonderful things about Reese Witherspoon and all these people who have worked together, I don't know if we've talked yet about the dynamic of being the boss of your friends or when your friends are your boss. I think you and Sasha get into it on What's Your Drama sometimes, but in Hollywood, it is a given. That's the way it's supposed to work, that one day I work for you and the next day you work for me. So let's put a pin in that for the next time that it's a project that we know people who like each other or have worked with each other before are doing, because that dynamic is something that I think is really worth exploring, especially where women are concerned. Thanks, Katie.
So here's the question, everybody. Let us know. Do you want to know the inside baseball of how Duanna and I switch roles from colleagues to friends to people taking direction from each other? Let us know.
And if you want to hear the, you know, the application to the Hollywood version of it, I did wince a little bit because when you said from colleague to friend, it reminded me of Jennifer Aniston's mother wrote a book called From Mother and Daughter to Friends. Obviously unauthorized.
Gross.
I know. But yeah, I think it's a more common dynamic than we realize. I think Katie's point is great, that a lot of the work advice says, don't do it, don't work with your friends. But that means A, they're not super current, and B, that there's not a lot of advice out there on how to do it. So I definitely think we have the time and the structure to dig into that more. Let us know.
All right. And now some recommendations, because everybody's sharing what they're doing during social distancing, because we have a lot of time now.
We do. So, okay, where are we starting? Books, films, what are we doing?
Why don't you go ahead? Where do you want to start?
Let's start with books, because I've really enjoyed that there have been a lot of people lately going, people who dropped books in this month or in the upcoming weeks had expected to be able to promote it, promote their books a lot more, and obviously aren't able to in the same way. And so I've come up with a few from various like avenues that I'm excited to dig into. One of them is called All Our Twisted Secrets, and it is by a woman named Diana Urban. I have not read it yet, but I just want you to know that the front quote, the pull quote, is from R.L. Stine, just in case you were wondering what kind of a book we're talking about. And this is about a dinner party where one of these people is not going to leave alive, or so they're told. They're all teenage people, really excited about it. And also really excited about a book called Most Likely from an author named Sarah Watson. Sarah Watson wrote on parenthood. She created the show The Bold Type. And her book, Most Likely, is about four friends in high school. One of them is going to become the president of the United States some 25 years in the future. But reading the book and reading about their adventures, we don't yet know which one. Really excited about both of them, and both are on my agenda for books this weekend. What do you got for books?
So I currently am rereading, so here's a serious one. I currently am rereading Rebecca Solnit's Men Explain Things to Me.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's a collection of essays. And the reason I'm rereading it is because, I mean, I don't want to be a bummer, but we all know that there will definitely be an economic impact on small business, business everywhere, because of coronavirus and social distancing and shutdowns. And there's a lot of worry that the gains that female entrepreneurs have made over the last decade in particular will be rolled back. Small businesses are generally where female entrepreneurs have thrived.
Right.
So small businesses are typically the ones who are going to be hit first if there is to be a recession or a depression. And there is, listen, the priority right now is everybody take care of their health. But I think that when all of this is settled, hopefully soon, we are going to have to really wrestle with what those consequences have been. And so, yeah, there are a lot of people quite worried about women in business. I am a woman in business. You are a woman in business, Duana. I know a lot of women in business, and a lot of female entrepreneurs are out there listening. And so I just wanted to sort of reread and check in with Rebecca's thoughts in order to sort of process my feelings about how we're going to come out of this, what the new world is going to be like, in particular for women who are trying to make a go of it.
Right.
So if you've never read it before, or even if you have, Rebecca Solnit is always one to go with, right?
Yeah. I mean, rereading is a real delight, even when, as you say, it's a heavier topic. But I am trying to balance it with, new books as well. And I consider myself to be a bit of a voracious consumer, but I don't always read two new books a week. Sometimes it's going back and relishing something that I love. So I'm gonna try and get some more new ones in. What do you got for TV?
So for TV, on the list is the two shows that you have been talking to me about, which is Utopia Falls and High Fidelity.
Right.
I also want to get started or at least go deeper into Pen 15.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't watched Pen 15, you guys, what a glorious departure. It is it's a comedy series about two girls in seventh grade. The actresses are not seventh graders. They are adults. And that's kind of all you need to know. It's delicious and you should enjoy it.
And, you know, I'm obsessed with Elite.
Yes.
And Elite I just binged season 3 last weekend. And so I obviously have a gaping hole of Spanish drama in my life now. So I think I'm actually finally going to get into Money Heist, which is on Netflix. I think there's 3 seasons, if not 4. And some of the actors, a couple, I think, of the actors from Elite are also in Money Heist. But Money Heist was actually one of the top titles on Netflix in 2018. Like, huge numbers. They don't release numbers, but it was established, especially in Latin America, that it was a huge performer for Netflix. And it's interesting because in the English-speaking world, I guess we miss news like that. Netflix is a huge platform around the world. So obviously it's not just catering to what we do in our, like, we think North America is the center of the universe thing, but in other parts of the world, it is catering to need and giving content. And so it's particularly done well with Money Heist and Elite, and Elite has crossed over into North America, as we can see from its, like, incessant coverage in Teen Vogue and Refinery 29. So yeah, I'm going to go with Money Heist. I'm adding Money Heist to the list. And of course, on that note about Netflix and its international offerings, I swear to you, I'm telling you, its East Asian library is crazy and amazing. And so I am always spending time there.
Well, when we started talking about the college admission scandal and Project Varsity Blues, a lot of you actually told me to check out the Korean drama Sky Castle. And it is as delicious as you all promised me. I highly encourage you guys to find that one. But I also wonder if our behaviors are going to change, because I was sitting here thinking, what am I going to say about TV? And I know that Westworld has just started, and The Plot Against America is something I'm really excited to get into. But those are episode by episode, week by week shows. And I'm feeling the need to binge more than ever before. So I wonder whether those will wind up being saved until they're piled up a little bit.
You know, in China, and also in Korea to a certain extent, but in China, they roll out their series like every day.
I mean, like a soap, essentially. Yeah.
So it is a binge in the sense of, like, Netflix drops entire seasons all at once, right? And you might watch all 8 episodes one night, or you might do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. In China, yeah, they roll it out in, like, on broadcast television once a day for whatever, 5 weeks straight. And that's always been the way that, like, I've known to consume Asian television. And that's also why in China in particular, their fucking series are so goddamn long. Like, it's not unusual for them to have 50 episodes.
Right, because you're doing them all the time. Yes. It makes perfect sense.
So then when they get to Netflix and you look at it, you're like, what? 50 episodes? And in the past, I've been like, that is too much of a goddamn commitment. I am not doing it. But now I'm like, yes, 50 episodes. I can do this.
Well, that's another reason to look into something that is international that you haven't watched before. If you want like super soft comfort, as Sarah from Lady Gossip would say, Call the Midwife is something like 8 seasons of 10 or 13 episodes apiece. It's the endless, lovely churn of babies and loves and cycling around London in the 50s. If you want something a little grittier, there are something like 7 or 8 seasons of Wentworth, which is an Australian series set in a women's prison. There are elements of Orange is the New Black, but there are also elements that are clearly their own, and it stands on its own. There's some real stars there. So yeah, it's a real comfort to sink into something and go, wow, 7 seasons. Yes, please.
All right. So music.
I mean, look, I'll be super honest. Somewhere along the way in my life continuing and becoming a culture vulture and so forth, I had to let new music fall by the wayside. I let you and our other friends tell me what to listen to, with the caveat that I'm really into the concerts that people are giving from home. I sent you one the other day where Andrew Lloyd Webber took votes on what he should sing. And people said he should sing All I Ask of You. And so he then, in the middle of it, is like doing asides to his dog and making snarky comments about cats. I am here for it when Andrew Lloyd Webber does it, when Lin-Manuel Miranda does it. I'm here for everybody doing their singing in their own house, as long as they're not trying to inspire us in a video they hope will go viral. Hem, hem.
Today, we're recording on Friday, March 20th, and The Weeknd dropped a new album today. I've been dipping in and out of it all day. It's great. It's actually, I mean, he's always about feelings, right? I mean, he's angsty and moany, and but it just seems completely right for the time. So even though I haven't like totally memorized it yet, I'm feeling it. It's really good. I can't wait to take him out for a walk. Like, you know, when you go out with your headphones on and you go out for a 2-hour walk and like you just repeat an album, it's going to be a good one for that.
Except I saw such an amazing tweet, and I really wish I had it in front of me to credit the person. I will do it on the next episode. That somebody was like, what business does The Weeknd have dropping a new album when so many of us can't have sex right now?
Yeah. And and you know what? It's that kind of like, it's that kind of sex that is like super intense. Like we're not dealing with like a fucking pounder. You're not smashing. It's the kind of sex you want to have with Lakeith Stanfield. You know,
of course it's Lakeith looking Stanfield into each other's eyes, Rodriguez. The whole thing. Yes.
Yeah. When Lakeith Stanfield and Gina Rodriguez's sex scenes in Someone Great, is that what it's called?
Yes, which I also recommend. That movie is way better than it has any right to be.
Oh yeah,
you should check it out. Can we end this recommendations portion with a request?
Yeah,
I have a request. I recently, I'm a deep, deep nerd, as we know, and I've really been enjoying logic puzzle apps. I heard them referred to as Sudoku with words, and I was deeply insulted. But you know the kind that says, if Pamela sold more cookies than Reggie, but fewer than Elaine, then which of them was on the green team? I have a couple of apps that I like to play these on my phone with, but I will take any recommendations for logic puzzles that you have in books, in apps. Is there a site I should go to? Please hit me up.
Yeah, let us know, and let us know what you are listening to and reading and binging and consuming. Give us your thoughts on what you'd like to hear us talk about on the next episode. Again, we're trying to record more often, so tell us the content that you would want to have.
And when it's most useful for you, if a new episode on a Friday afternoon will help differentiate between a weekday and a weekend, or if they're best for the angsty 2 a.m. wake-ups, you let us know, and we'll try to be there, because if there's one thing we can continue to do, it is talk.
You know what I'm really into, actually? Not to like be those people who keep on trying to end a conversation then being like, oh yeah. But I'm, for some reason, I'm obsessed with these projection models like that scientists are coming up with about COVID-19 and the curve and what flattening it or planking it looks like. The New York Times just put out like essentially it was an article just of graphs, Duana. And
oh, you mean the visual kind of representations of them?
Yeah.
And sometimes when you scroll, like different things happen, yeah. Right?
Not that, like, listen, it's not something to be obsessed about. It's not fun. It's just, it's my way of saying and ending this podcast with, please, everybody, continue to social distance. And by social distancing, we mean doing it properly so that this can be over sooner rather than later.
Someday. Sooner. Yeah. Someday.
Observe the lockdown. Try not to have any contact with people who are outside of your household. I know it's hard for everybody, lots of people, and I know lots of people might not be able to financially do it. Like some people still have to go to work in essential services. But if you don't, please social distance, isolate so that this can come to an end sooner rather than later. Take care of yourselves.
Yeah, if you're one of the millions of people who says, I'm doing it all, but how do I tell my parents? Maybe send them some of those graphics because maybe those will get things across.
And until next time, thank you so much for listening. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave comments and reviews. Send us emails. Send us notes. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.